This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, and I have what I hope will prove to be an interesting show for you guys. Today I'm going to talk about reincarnation and near-death experiences. And I have a bit of a special treat for you guys. Some of you out there have known that my wife, Jolene, had an experience with a near-death experience herself when she was 4 years old, and that it has essentially driven her life since then. It has shaped the way that her life has gone since that period in time. I have her coming on the show later on in it's an interview that I did of her. And she's going to tell her near-death experience for the first time aloud publicly like this. And hopefully you guys will enjoy it. It's a really spectacular one, I think. It's really interesting. And I hope that you guys will enjoy it. I'm also going to be talking more in general about the topic, as well as the topic of reincarnation. I believe that the two tie together really well. So, there you go. So, before we begin, I really would like to thank all of you guys for listening. I want to thank all of you guys for the great feedback that I've been getting about the shows. I had a lot of really good feedback about the Hellish Doctrines show. A lot of you guys responded really positively to that. And I was kind of surprised because I expected that a lot more people would be, I guess a little bit more, down regarding it, but I'm pleasantly surprised and I'm glad that you guys enjoyed it. I'm going to actually be talking a lot about, some religious issues on Friday, not just Christianity, of course, but, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, all the religions are going to kind of face the eyeball on me here a little bit. And I'm going to speak especially about the anti-gay agenda that's out there, as well as a lot of other things along those lines. I think that you guys will find it very interesting, to say the least. So before getting started on tonight's topic, I want to bring you some news that I've run across. The first bit of news that I have, it's in regards to Russia and 9/11. On today the Russia released information saying that they are preparing to release evidence of the involvement of the United States government and intelligence services to the September 11th attacks. The list of evidence that they're going to bring forward will include satellite images that were found in relation to the quote-unquote terrorist attacks. Now, if you've been listening to my show for any amount of time, you know that when it comes to 9/11 and other events along those lines, they were false flag events. They were obvious. The government was very complicit in the actions that took place, and if not directly involved themselves, at least allowed it to happen, at the very least. You can't tell me that 19 guys with box cutters are going to, that are on planes are going to do anything to shut down NORAD and eliminate the ability for the greatest air force on the planet to do anything to stop these planes from entering into the buildings and so on and so forth. You can't tell me with any kind of reasonableness that that sort of thing occurred. It's impossible. The whole thing was a false flag. It was a lie, and there's more than enough evidence out there to show it. If you don't believe it, I got to look at you like you're either some kind of person who has never looked at any of the evidence, which I would say if you want to be an honest person with yourself, go do, or you're flat out a shill. There's just no two ways about it. There's way more than enough evidence to show that at least the official story is not the truth, flat out. So with Russia saying that they're going to release this sort of information, you know, this comes on the heels of all of the actions going on in Ukraine. And I wonder if maybe Russia is going to do this as a distraction technique away from themselves and point the world's view at the United States in order to basically to assuage some of the heat that they're garnering with the Ukraine situation. I don't know for sure, but that's my take on it. That's my first impression with it as a reason why they would do this now after, 14 years almost worth of time to come forward and do this now as opposed to before. I think that it's mainly because they want to use it as a tactic to relieve themselves a little bit, I guess you could say. That's my take on it. I don't know for sure. We will see. We will see if they even do it. They may not. Who knows? It's hard to tell when it comes to the power elite. Of course, all of it is just a big game one way or the other anyways. So, moving on. Ajit Pai, one of two Republican commissioners on the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, inferred in a tweet that President Barack Obama's secret 332-page net neutrality document is a scheme for federal micromanaging of the internet to extract billions in new taxes from consumers and again enforce progressives' ideas of honest, equitable, and balanced content fairness. Now, of course, this is coming from a very politically motivated or politically biased source. Hopefully you can disregard some of the biasness with it, because I'm going to give my own opinion here in a minute. The Federal Communications Commission is misleading the public about its 332-page plan to regulate the internet, Republican member of the commission said on Tuesday. The net neutrality plan could in fact open doors to new fees and taxes, as well as government control over the prices that internet providers charge their customers. Going on the heels of this as well, protesters who were holding up signs saying 85% of Republicans support net neutrality were tackled, body slammed to the ground, and removed from the site at the announcement of the FCC commissioners talking about the fact that they're going to be declaring their thoughts on net neutrality here very soon. Why they did that, nobody really knows. But there's a lot of stuff that's going on with this whole new net neutrality issue. If you remember hearing me talk about the net neutrality issue before, I've brought it up a couple of times here in the past few weeks. It's one that I'm paying a lot of attention to. But this guy saying this, it really does fall right into line with exactly what it was that I was saying 2 weeks ago would end up occurring with all of this. Go back in my archives and listen. OpenEyesNetwork.com. Go back in my archives and listen to my reasons or my thoughts on the reasons why they are trying to push through this whole Title II regulatory strictures on the internet. It's because they're trying to drown out the smaller ISPs, and they're trying to do everything that they can to make as much money as they can off of the whole deal. They're trying to stranglehold the small ISPs who are not bowing down to the government, as Comcast, Verizon, Frontier, Dish, all of those other telecom providers do. They bow right down to the government and hand them any information that they're requesting, do everything that they can to fall in line, goose-stepping right along with whatever the government tells them to do. So these smaller ISPs that are holding out against that kind of thing are going to be choked out by the new fees and requirements with the new regulations that are coming in. They're going to get choked out. They're not going to be able to afford to stay in business, whereas the large ISPs, the large internet service providers, will be able to swallow all of the things that are going to be needed at first with these new regulations. They're going to be able to eat those losses and still come out on top. You know that there's an issue when the companies that want to have the fast lanes, the ones that want to be able to charge fees, such as Comcast charging Netflix for the bandwidth that Netflix uses, you know that there's an issue when those companies are the ones that are behind the FCC's push towards this idea of regulations with net neutrality. Look into it, guys. They're not doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing it because they know that they're going to make a profit in the end of things. It's that simple. Pay attention. Like I said, you can go back in my archives and hear that I definitely called it, that was what was going to end up happening, that it's going to cost all of us a hell of a lot more in the end than what we're getting right now. And by the time all is said and done, we're probably going to all end up with not only slower internet, but maybe even censored websites and everything at that point. I mean, who knows how long a place like LateNightInTheMidlands.com or OpenEyesNetwork.com that talk about all of this kind of stuff, that try to reveal the truth about stuff, how long these websites like ours are going to still be able to run. I know I can't afford to pay some company money in order to have my website run at any kind of a decent rate. I can't do it. I don't know, guys. Pay attention to this net neutrality stuff. It's really important. It really is. President Obama will soon give Congress his proposal for a new authorization for the use of military force against ISIS fighters, and it will place strict limits on the types of U.S. ground forces that can be deployed, according to congressional sources. Almost 6 months after the president began using force against ISIS, ISIS's advance in Iraq and Syria, the White House is ready to ask Congress for formal permission to continue the effort. Until now, the administration has maintained it has enough authority to wage war through the 2001 Authorization of Use of Military Force Act on Al-Qaeda and the 2002 AUMF regarding Iraq and Article 3 of the Constitution. But under pressure from Capitol Hill, the White House has now completed the text of a new authorization and could send it to lawmakers as early as Wednesday. If enacted, the president's AUMF could effectively constrain the next president from waging a ground war against the Islamic State, or ISIS, group until at least 2018. Aides warned that the White House may tweak the final details before releasing the document publicly. So, why would he do something along these lines? Well, to me, it seems pretty obvious. These people are, in actuality, our allies. That's what it comes down to. The whole thing is Hollywood. And we know this. There's been enough proof put forward that this whole thing really is Hollywood. Al-Qaeda was set up by the United States Secret Service and institutions, and ISIS, or the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, was set up by the Mossad. It was set up by their intelligence service. They're two sides of the same coin, essentially. We have supplied these guys with weapons, with vehicles, with ammunition, with money, on and on and on. We have supported them from the beginning. So it would be obvious to me that putting constraints on the ability to go to a ground war situation or stepping up a ground war situation instead of just using drones and that sort of thing like they're doing now, instead of putting feet on the ground there a lot more than what we're seeing, they would not do that because that would just eliminate their plan, essentially. So, of course, they're going to push forward the idea that, oh, well, we don't really want ground troops there yet. They're going to get there, though. They're going to get there because this is the next stage in the war machine. They're right now, they're building up this propaganda against ISIS because they want the American public to have as much impetus to allow them to go to war once again without us arguing over it, essentially. They're trying to get as many people behind the idea that we have to go into this whole ground war situation before they start doing it, because they've gotten so much backlash over the past, like when people were talking about trying to go into Libya and trying to go into Syria, trying to go into Iran. They got a lot of backlash from the public because, well, the public has gotten sick of war. It seems like we are always at war, right? Well, the fact is that, yes, we are always at war. There's no denying that. There's, since World War I, World War II, there has only been a period of time of about 5 years total that America has not been at war in one way, shape, or form. Now, granted, a lot of that time was the Cold War, allegedly, but even during that period of time, it was still a state of war, and the military machine was still getting a vast amount of money and resources dedicated to it for the public defense. That's what we see happening right now. We see them gearing up this machine of war because we've moved troops from one location away to another in preparation for the next stages of things. It's all parts on the chessboard, guys. It's a game. This is just the next stage of the game that they're working for. But they don't want too much outcry from the American public. So they're going to do everything that they can to piss the American public off in relation to ISIS and everything that it stands for, that eventually Americans themselves are going to be standing up and calling out against this group and against this idealism that they have. Another hostage was allegedly killed again. What, just today? Or it was at least announced today. They're gearing it up. In relation to the craziness that the politicians have in their mind, you remember me saying on Monday that the lawmakers in Congress are trying to enact a law that exempts them from being prosecuted for corruption and corruption-related crimes. Well, now, Representative Elijah Cumming, the Democrat from Maryland, says, so many people come to government knowing that they are not going to make the kind of money that they would make in the private sector, but they come to government to feed their souls. Cummings was speaking to in Washington, D.C. at the legislative conference on the National Treasury Employees Union on February 4th when he made the comments. And it's just being basically coming out big time right now. So on my birthday, in fact. So here you have this guy, a congressman. And I know that he's not the only one, by the way. There are a lot of others that have this same kind of attitude in government facilities or groups, sorry. A lot of them believe that they are doing the right thing in the things that they do, that they are doing it for their souls. It's a ridiculous statement when you look at the actual facts of things, that actions speak louder than words idea, right? These guys that are there, they are doing everything that they can to push themselves forward, vote themselves to have lifetime pay, vote themselves to have an exemption from Obamacare, but be able to have health care that is more extravagant and wonderful than anybody else in America could have ever wished for. They vote themselves to have free haircuts for life. And I mean, it's how is that helping the American people? How is that helping the American public, right? How is it that them voting for people to have the maximum amount of $30,000 or whatever dollars to be able to then donate $300,000 at the maximum, how is that helping the American public? It's not. All of these things just either help themselves, help their spouses or families, or help their political careers. It does nothing for the American public. It does nothing for you and me. How is them voting $479 million to go to Lockheed Martin for four planes that don't fly, can't turn, don't shoot, don't do anything? How is them voting that in place helping the American public? And yet then cutting $90 million off of the WIC funding, cutting $93 million or so off of the food stamp program, on and on and on. Those programs do help the American public. And of course, those are the ones that get cut first, right? It's frustrating. It's frustrating to then see them try to claim, oh, well, we're here. We public servants are doing this out of the kindness of our hearts. We're doing this because we're good people. We're doing this because we feel like we're doing the right thing. It's bull. It's a lie. They're not doing it for the good of their souls. They're doing it for the good of their pockets. Now, granted that a lot of people that are in public service, when I'm saying all of that stuff there, I'm speaking particularly about politicians. I'm not speaking about people who are involved in public service. That's a different thing altogether. Public service, as in people that are in waste management, people that are in ENTs, firefighters, you know, that sort of thing. Even police officers, even though I have some things to say about police officers, but particularly only the bad ones, those type of people, yes, they are doing it maybe for the good of their souls. They're doing it because they want to help their neighborhoods. They want to help the people that are out there. It's a different story. Anyways, I just had to speak about the politicians thing because I've been encountering so much stuff about politics here over the past couple of days. I just had to kind of get it off my chest, I guess. Hope you guys don't mind. A woman in Sydney was killed by police outside of a fast food outlet while she was holding a knife. They claimed that she was looking possessed. That's what some witness statements have said, that she was looking possessed. Several calls were made to police on Tuesday morning after the 22-year-old woman was spotted carrying a large knife and wandering around the Hungry Jack's car park at West Hoxton in Sydney. Witness Annabelle O'Clairborne, I think that's how her name's pronounced, said that she called police after noticing the woman's strange behavior. She was very out of it. She didn't seem to know where she was. She almost seemed like she was a zombie. Now, this kind of thing has happened before, right? With the whole, they claimed that it was the bath salts that were causing the issues and all that kind of stuff. Look, guys, this kind of thing actually happens a lot more frequently than people realize. There are a lot of people right now who are out there that are very disconnected emotionally. A lot of it is due to the over-pharmaceuticalization of the people. Everybody is on some kind of prescription drug of some kind. The stats are that essentially so much money is spent on prescription drugs here in America alone that it's enough for each single person, each individual, including babies and children, to basically spend over $1,000 per year per person. That's how much money is made by the pharmaceutical companies. That's how much money is made by the overabundance of prescriptions that are out there. And you see a lot of people right now all the time walking around like they're almost in this zombie state. And it's because of all of these medications that people are on. It really is kind of a scary situation when you think about it. I don't know. I ran across that and I just had to bring that up because actually next week I'm going to talk about some of the things in the pharmaceutical industry and especially in relation to the over prescribing of medications that are going on. I'm probably going to be covering that topic on next Monday. We shall see. Anyways, I had to bring that up because of the thought behind all of that. It's really scary when you think about just how many people out there are doped up on these legal drugs, and yet we still have to fight tooth and nail just to try to get marijuana legalized. That's the demon drug, and yet all these others, they're just fine because they're manufactured. even though so many of them are so much worse for the human body and the human psyche than marijuana could ever imagine itself to be, and not very beneficial either, unlike something like cannabis. So guys, I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'm going to speak about near-death experiences. I'm going to bring you the interview that I did with Jolene that I really think that you guys will like. She put a lot of thought into bringing it out for you guys. So anyways, we will take this break. We will be back in just a few minutes. Hang around.
The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed.
Have you been looking for answers? Have you been seeking the truth but can't seem to find it? Late Night in the Midlands has the answers for you. Whether you are interested in the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, alternative health information, or just a little hope and inspiration, we have a show for you. Late Night in the Midlands, Open Eyes, The Red Pill Reality Show, The Secret Teachings, Paranormal Perceptions, and The Turning of the Wheel. All here on the L&M Network for you to listen to at any time that you want. Everything is free to listen to, and though it is not required, we are listener supported, and all donations are deeply appreciated. You will not find shows like these in the mainstream media. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com to listen. The L&M Network, where the truth has no fear.
To succeed, you love.
That song, I thought that song was just perfect for tonight's topic. I thought, you know, I got to play this song. That was Wanderer's Lullaby by Adriana Figuera. I believe that's how her name is pronounced. Anyways, it's a really good song. I thought it was just perfect for tonight's episode. So I wanted to talk about the topic of near-death experiences. There have been a lot of people that have had near-death experiences. My wife, in fact, is one of them. I'm going to play you that interview that I did with her here in just a short bit and let you guys hear her side of things and what she experienced. But there are some things that I would like to touch on first before getting to her audio. Near-death experiences, or NDEs, have been experienced by people throughout all of human history, as far as we know. Many people experience different things in them, but the overriding theme of them seems to be like a white light or a tunnel of some kind, getting pulled through to it or into it, and entering into a zone of complete peace and calmness, and almost always a feeling that like of deep and unspeakable love. That's like always, well, not always, but that is the overarching theme to every near-death experience that I've ever heard. And I've heard a lot of them over the years. They all seem to fall into that pattern or that category of things overall. There have been a ton of scientific studies on the phenomenon, but none of them have been conclusive. Most scientists think that it's nothing more than just the effect that the brain has when it's dying or lacking oxygen, and that's sort of that. That's essentially their entire argument about it. That's their entire take on it. But that doesn't explain how people that have gone through it see themselves, like turning around and seeing their bodies, seeing the doctors working on them, seeing the environment that they're in, seeing everything going on, hearing all of the sounds that are happening, even though they are at that point clinically dead, they can look down on themselves and see every single thing going on. Go out into the hallway and hear the doctors discussing them and know exactly word for word things that were said about them. Hear somebody talking on the phone and know exactly what was being said in the conversation, even though they have no personal information about the people that are involved or anything in the situation. Some of them have experienced where they have traveled for miles and seen events happening in certain locations and be able to recount exactly what happened. And then later it's discovered that that is exactly what happened. They had no ability in any way, shape, or form to know that this happened to them or happened in that location, miles away, completely disconnected from anything that they're going through at that moment in time. And yet they could recount word for word exactly what happened while it was going on. So how can scientists say there's no evidence of it? There's nothing conclusive. There's nothing that's going on. We wear the lab coats and have the numbers and letters behind our names. We know what we're talking about. And yet they can't even explain what the consciousness is, let alone where it sits in the brain, where it comes from, what its function is. They can do none of those things, but they can state conclusively, yes, there's no such thing as a near-death experience. Bull. It's a lie. They are lying, whether it's through ignorance or on purpose, one way or the other, it's a lie. Other people, when they're going through the experiences, they might say that they experience seeing Jesus or the angels and that sort of thing. I don't discount those as possibilities either. You know, when it comes to everything near-death experience, I don't discount any of them. I mean, they were not my experience to have. So how can I say, no, you never did that, or no, you are lying? I can't. That's your own personal experience. I can't argue against that. My own personal take on it is that maybe what happens sometimes during a near-death experience is that when you die, and this is kind of, again, this is my own personal take on it, but maybe it when you die, the things that you see during your experience are done in a way to help you relate to what your belief structure is. So if you believe that when you die, you're going to go see Jesus Christ, then when you die, you're going to go and see Jesus Christ. Other people have experienced what they claim are versions of hell. And again, I don't discount that as being a possibility, although I don't believe in the existence of a hell myself. And I've given the reasons why, for instance, last week on my Hellish Doctrines episode. I again, don't discount the possibility that a belief structure or a belief system does help to shape what you see during these experiences or what you have happen to you, I guess, during the period of time between when you die and when you come back. That's always a possibility, and we just don't know for sure. But see, that's again the point of where scientists who are investigating the phenomenon sort of don't go. It's a place that they don't go because most of them are out to debunk the phenomenon and start from the bias of this could not possibly exist, as opposed to just saying, well, maybe it's possible. Let's examine the data and see what we see. when you start off with that negative bias, of course, you're going to end up with a negative outcome. That's very well proven. And science is good for that. Scientists are very good at doing exactly that. They put their own personal biases into the studies that they put forward. And that's unfortunate because that's not real science. Now, there are a lot of books on the topic of near-death experiences. There are a lot of books that are either personal accounts of NDEs that they've had, or there are some that are out there that are collections of NDEs that you could go and you could read. They're really fascinating to examine. Unfortunately, some of them are not so reliable. I mean, for example, there's this book that's out, and it was a number one bestseller for a couple of years. It was huge. I mean, it was a big money maker. It was called The Boy Who Went to Heaven. And the boy who wrote it came out just a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, saying that he lied about the whole thing. The whole thing was made up from the get-go. He did it basically because of his father. Unfortunately, that does not do the topic any good. That kind of thing just does not do the topic any justice. It, I wonder if some people out there actually do this type of thing as an agenda to muddy the issue, so to speak. But still, there is enough evidence and eyewitness testimonials out there to establish that something is going on and that it should be examined, a lot more seriously. It should be taken a lot more seriously. On the show notes for this episode, you can find them at openeyesnetwork.com/OE070. I'll have a link to a website. It's IANDS.org. This website, it's a place that you could go to tell your NDE to write out and make available to let people see your near-death experience. And the information that's there is anonymous. So when you read somebody's post there, it's from an anonymous source. But the public can go and read through all of the NDEs that people have there. And again, it's really fascinating. It's a really interesting website to look through to see what different people go through with their near-death experiences and what they've sort of taken away from the NDEs afterwards. I find the topic fascinating anyways. These are all firsthand accounts of people telling basically what happened to them during their deaths. You can really glean an overall pattern of things if you start reading through all of it. I'm going to go ahead and play the interview that I did with my wife, Jolene Robinson. She is, for those of you who don't know, she is 25 years old right now. And she had a near-death experience when she was 4 years old. She remembers everything very distinctly. In fact, she remembers everything from her childhood. She didn't really go into this in her accounting here that I'm going to play for you. But she's one of the type of people that can remember everything from when she was a little child. And it may actually be thus because of the fact that she did die and come back. But she can remember laying in her crib and thinking thoughts and thinking words, but not being able to speak the words and being frustrated that she could hear the words in her mind, but not be able to get anything out besides goo goo ga ga kind of thing when she was trying to speak to people. Or remember sitting there with this dirty diaper on and trying to get someone's attention and they're not listening to her and so on and so forth. It's kind of interesting. Like I said, this is from a person who had this near-death experience, and she's walked away from it completely changed because of what she learned during her experience. So this interview is kind of long. It's she goes really into detail with everything and tries to get as much information out as she possibly can to you guys. So I hope that you guys enjoy it, and I'll give my thoughts and everything on the other side of it. So hold on, here you go.
Hello, my name is Jolene. I am Ira's wife. And today I'm going to tell you my NDE. Before I do that, however, I need to kind of do a quick explanation as to what happened before it. Basically, I was born with a rare heart disease called tricuspid atresia. Long story short, that means in the heart there is a tricuspid valve, and I was born without one, as well as the bottom right chamber of my heart was underdeveloped. It was basically a shriveled raisin, you could say. And I also was born with holes in the heart. Because of that, I have had multiple surgeries. If you want to look more into it, you can look online, tricuspid atresia, and learn more about the disease itself. But the NDE stemmed from when I had my surgery when I was about 4 years old. So that's where this takes place. I just wanted to bring that up because it does tie into everything. So basically, I was about 4 years old, and I knew we were going to go to the doctor's to get my heart fixed. So way early in the morning, my mom wakes me up so that we can leave. Because of this is because we live in northeastern Indiana, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we were going to go to Indianapolis to go to the Riley Children's Hospital. That's where I was going to have my surgery at. So we had to wake up really early so that we could get down there. And I really remember all this, too, because my family came with, like, my entire family, which to me was just a doctor's visit. I did not really understand what all was going to be involved with it. So to have my entire family come to a doctor's visit, that was quite absurd. But, yeah, I thought it was fun. So, long story short, we're at the hospital. I don't know how long I was there before they actually had the surgery, but the night before the surgery, my mom sat me down and had a talk with me, and she tells me, Jolene, you know how your grandma's been crying, which I know she had been, which was had bothered me terribly. I didn't understand why my grandma had been crying a lot. It really bothered me because it's like, Grandma, the doctors are going to fix my heart. Why are you crying? And I'm sure I probably acted out on this. You know, I probably misbehaved a few times because of this. So my mom, you know, explained to me, you remember that, right? You remember how Grandma seems to be crying a lot, right? I was like, yeah. She says, well, the reason for it is because there's a chance that when you have your surgery tomorrow, you may not live. And, yeah, that was a lot to really try to think of. That was a lot to comprehend for a young girl. You know, it was hard. It was the first thing that went through my head was, oh my gosh, I'm going to die before my grandparents. I'm going to die before ever going to school, ever making a friend. And it was, I will not deny, I panicked at first. But at the same time, I thought, okay, I don't want, if I do die tomorrow, I don't want my last few hours or whatever be panicking. So I sat there and I thought, okay, what would God's purpose of this to be? Now, let me just say real quick, I had no upbringing, like no religious upbringing. So at this point in time, my only idea of heaven or anything, was just heaven and God. It wasn't until first grade that I found out that Jesus Christ was not a curse word. So, just to make that clear. So I had a comprehension of God, you know, creator, that sort of thing. So I thought, okay, what would the creator's purpose be if I were to die tomorrow? What would the purpose of me living for just a few years and then dying be? And I thought about it, and I thought, okay, well, maybe it's because when I die, the doctors or scientists or whoever can study my heart and maybe perfect the procedure a little bit more so that when other kids my age have the same surgery, they have a higher success of living versus what I had. Perhaps my heart could, you know, go towards that, help other kids so that they don't have to go through what I went through. And as soon as I thought about that, I was like, that makes sense. If this does happen, if I do die tomorrow, then maybe my heart will help, you know, help cure something for other kids in the future. And I got really happy with that thought. I won't deny, I actually wanted to die at this point in time, because I thought to know that I could possibly help others would be just awesome. It would be great, and I would just be thankful for that to happen. So, you know, once I got done, you know, processing this and thinking all this, I looked at my mom and I said, well, it's God's choice to have me live or die, which of course my mom started crying, and I had no idea why she was crying at that point, but whatever. So, the next evening actually was my surgery. My surgery was at 7 o'clock in the evening, and, we were in the room with the doctor. He was doing routine, you know, checkup, you know, hearing my heart with the stethoscope and all that, and, my mom's trying hard to compose herself. I was sitting there having fun with it all, really. The doctor was explaining to me what was going to happen, what was, you know, what he was going to do, you know, here, I'm going to check your heart, and this and that. And eventually it came time to put me asleep. Now, I was put to sleep doing gas anesthesia. I don't know the correct terminology of it, but I was given a mask that pumped gas, and it put me to sleep. So the doctor told me I got to choose the flavor or scent that I would be smelling that would put me to sleep. He went through a huge list. Usually I would choose strawberry at this instance, but thinking to myself, hey, this might be the last time I'm alive, I'm going to do something different, I chose pink bubblegum, which my mom's even harder trying not to cry, and she's like, why didn't you choose strawberry? Well, I wanted to do something different. So the doctor gets the gas ready, and he's holding the mask, and he's explaining how he's going to put it on me and how it's going to feel. And he explains to me, you know, hey, do you know how to count to 10? Yeah, I know how to count to 10. Can you count to 100? Yes. Can you count backwards? Yes. He says, well, one little thing that we have patients do is count backwards from 100 and see how far they can get before they pass out. I said, okay, I want to do that. So he puts the mask on me, and then he tells me when to start counting. So I start counting. I think I only got to 97. I didn't get very far. All I remember is I counted 100, 99, maybe 98. I don't know. But my vision got extremely blurry, and I started falling backwards, and I was out before I even touched the bed. You know, I was out. So my surgery happened. And the next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in a recovery room. To the right of me are some chairs, and there's what I later find out is a nurse sitting in one of the chairs looking at a magazine. And then to my left, is kind of part of the wall, but is also a walkway. And I can see that there's beyond that is a little, desk, and I can see there's somebody over there. So I wake up. And I realized that, well, obviously I didn't die. And I won't deny, I actually felt disappointed. But I was like, well, that's okay. I wasn't needed. So I slowly move all the digits of me. I move my fingers a little bit. I move my toes. And I look down on my body and I can just see all the wires and tubes coming out of me. Because, I mean, I was hooked up to a machine for at least a few days. And I slowly raise my arms and I can just feel the wires and the tubes all connected to me. And all of a sudden, beyond my control, I started crying. I couldn't, you know, I was screaming in my head, what are you doing? Stop crying. You just had, you know, just had surgery. You don't want to start crying. And I couldn't stop. I don't know what happened, but I could not stop. I was just crying so hard. And two nurses rushed over to me. And they put me back to sleep. But just before that happened, I had, like, the tunnel thing happen, so I assume it's some sort of blood pressure thing happened, I'm not sure, but I had a tunnel thing where I was, like, sinking within myself, and I saw tunnels, and it was just, I had no control over my body. The next time that I wake up, I'm in a private children's hospital room, which this is the first time I'm in a private children's hospital room. Up until this point, I had been sharing rooms with other kids. So I wake up, and again, it's still at night. It's still the same day. It's really late at night. There's no one else in a room with me. I look to the left. I can see windows and the little couch sofa thing. To the right, I see the door and the sink and whatnot, what have you, the clock above it. And then at the foot of my bed, I can see the, my foot of the bed is the cabinets, as well as up above, attached to the ceiling, is a TV, you know, an old TV with a VHS player at the bottom of it. So I'm sitting there, I'm laying there, and I'm trying to think, okay, what just happened? You know, the whole me crying uncontrollably. I couldn't understand why that happened, so I was rethinking it. And as I'm sitting there thinking of it, I realize there's something near the TV. And I'm squinting. I have really poor vision. I'm squinting. I'm trying to make out what it is. And I see it starting to get brighter. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. You know, is it a reflection on the TV itself? Or is it, you know, maybe a light, you know, that signals, you know, the TV's on or off, but I couldn't tell the color right away. And then I realized it was white. And I'm like, what is it? And it wasn't right on the screen either. And before I know it, it's getting bigger and brighter and whiter. And then I see out of my peripheral vision that I'm actually rising. I'm levitating. I'm getting closer to this bright point. And I have the urge to look behind me, but at the same time, I have the feeling of if I look behind me, I'm going to fall. So I just keep staring at this white light, and it's at that point that I realize I can hear things. And I can hear, you know, different machines going off, and I hear one of them, beep, which at that time I didn't know what that meant. And I hear voices. But as I'm getting closer to this light, as I'm getting closer to this, what's becoming a large, bright point, the voices are slowly, the sounds and everything is slowly getting dimmer and harder to hear. And I'm just getting closer and closer to this white light. And then just before it engulfs me, I look back and I see my body. I'm laying in the bed and I see, I want to say at least a doctor and two nurses around my body. And then I am engulfed. I am in the white light. This is hard to explain. This part is really hard to explain because it's nothing that can be compared to anything. It's perfectly white and yet every color at the same time. I feel so happy, so calm, at peace. I didn't even have a body. And in front of me, there was like a veil. And beyond that veil was something else. Something, I'm not even going to say it's a corporeal or anything like that, but just there was something else beyond that veil. Something, there was a shroud between me and it. And it was looking at me, but I couldn't see it. And I could feel it. I could see it. I mean, I couldn't see it, but I could feel it. I could sense it. I could tell it was there. I could feel it looking at me. And it asked me, are you ready? And when it asked, it wasn't with words. Even though I had no body, it was as if it was speaking, as if the words appeared in my heart. It's hard to explain. You know how sometimes you have different thoughts and you can feel them literally, the thoughts literally either on the top of your head or in the front of your head or maybe in the back of your head. No, this was the words formed in my heart, where my heart would have been, and that's how it spoke to me. And it asked, are you ready? And I knew that this that was questioning me, this thing that was talking to me, was God, was the creator, was the God consciousness, however you want to put it. Then I knew exactly what it meant. Then I knew exactly what it was, and it made sense. And it's hard to explain it now. And when it asked, are you ready? I knew what it meant. Was I ready to go home? Was I ready to die, have my body die, and go on with this? Go on with not only creator, but go on to what happens next. I knew that's what it meant. And I sat there. Well, I didn't really sit there, but, you know, I was there, and I thought about it. And I thought about, I knew at this point that even if I did die, my heart really wouldn't do anything. My heart wouldn't make any difference at all. So it was literally my own choice. Do I want to die or do I want to live? So I thought of my mom and my family, and I didn't want to make them cry, and I didn't want to make them sad. I didn't want to give them a reason to be sad for me. So I said no. And again, I didn't even speak either. It was, again, through the heart. I mean, it's so hard to explain. And instantly, it asked, are you sure? Boom. I knew things. I could see things. I didn't really see it, but it was as if I was looking through a book. I thought of different people. I thought of different things. And I could see, I could feel, I could understand and know it as truth, know it as a fact that this was going to happen. I thought of my mom, and I could feel and see what was going to happen. That, and I didn't really see it either. It's so hard to explain, but it's like I knew that in time, not long after this point in time, I would start to fall away from my mom. Our relationship wouldn't be as close as it was then, and it would get hard, and I could feel the sadness and the depression and the anguish that I was going to feel. But I also felt happy in this place that I was. I felt happy and joy. And I'm feeling this and I'm thinking, oh, it's not that bad. Maybe I could change it. But at the same time, I knew I couldn't change it. It was just one of those things. It was supposed to be. And I knew that. And I accepted that. And at the same time, I saw also that there would also be a point in time when there would be an event and I would lose contact with my mom. And I thought of my family, every family member, and it was basically the same thing. It was basically the same thing, you know, different timings, but it was basically the same thing where I would slowly lose, you know, I'd slowly not be so close to them. But at the same time, there would be a single event, just like with my mom, that would end it, that would change it. And this saddened me. And I seriously contemplated on going. I seriously contemplated on leaving. Because at this point, there was no real reason to go on. Because, you know, there would be just so much sadness and everything. And I had nothing really to go for, you know. But as I thought about it, I thought, no. I want to experience love. I want to experience happiness. I want to experience having a husband. One who will love me. One who won't, you know, cheat on me. One who won't leave me. One who will be not only my best friend, but my greatest companion. And I also wanted to have kids. I also wanted to experience having kids. If there's anything I wanted to do, there was that as well. I wanted to experience having kids. And in this state, I knew that I myself could not have kids. And it made sense. And I understood it. But I still wanted kids in any way possible, whether it be adoption or some other weird, unknown method to me that, you know, I was leaving it up to creator, you know, creator's hands and the creative forces' hands, you know. But I wanted kids. I wanted kids. And I wanted a husband. Most of all, I wanted a husband. I wanted love. I wanted to experience love. And as I was creating this, you could say, as I was thinking of all this, I knew it was coming true. I knew it was forming. I knew I was creating my own reality. And basically when I finished, I had, you could say, a fractal view of what my family to be would look like. My husband would have darker hair and darker eyes and skin about the same color as me. The daughter would have, again, skin about the color of me, but lighter hair than I and lighter eyes. And then my son would have even lighter hair and the same colored skin and light colored eyes. Didn't really get the glimpse of the color specifically, but I could tell it was going to be a dark shade or a light shade. And I also knew that, you know, with me and the daughter, we wouldn't be as close as I would want us to be. And then with me and the son, there would be difficulties. There would be difficulties with raising the son, but I didn't know what, and it didn't matter at that time. And as soon as that came to be, I thought, this is what I want. This is what I want. And so I spoke, you could say, although it wasn't speaking, I said, this is what I want. And it said, God said, Creator said, it is so. And so then I went backwards. I was coming out of the light into the room. And I'm just staring up at the light this time. I'm not looking backwards. I'm not looking anywhere. And I make it maybe about halfway through the room. And I go black. My vision and everything goes black. Next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in the same room and I'm surrounded by family. It's in the middle of the day and almost all of them have tears in their eyes and they're looking at me. And that was that.
So let me ask you a couple of questions then, honey, and thank you for giving your story here, because this is, I think, really important. I think everybody who has experience this type of thing really needs to come forward with their stories, because so many people are lost and confused as to what comes next. But just to clarify things, you said that when you were looking at everything that was going to end up happening to you in your life, and the being said it is so, you said that it was like you were creating the reality yourself, like it was I don't know, kind of a choose your own adventure. And this is the adventure that you chose. And so it like laid out a whole bunch of different patterns that would be, here you go, this is what it's going to be. And you could like have chosen something different if you had decided to.
Yes, it was, it's really hard to explain, but it's as I was essentially creating you, as I was doing this, I knew that it was coming to pass. I knew that it was going to happen. And I knew that I could do this. I knew that I was able to. It's hard to explain. I mean, there's many layers to this NDE. It's just hard to explain, because even now, after having said it, I'm thinking of other things I didn't really say. But it's little tiny stuff. But it's just the NDE itself. There was so much to it. I mean, an example of how I knew I was actually creating the reality, not only because I saw a fractaled image of what would be you and the kids, but was also because after I had created it, actually before I saw the fractaled image, I also was given a glimpse, given an idea that I would have to go through three uphills, three trials and tribulations, if you want to call it. I don't know what you want to call it, but I knew that that would have to happen as well. That I would go through that with you, and specifically just you, but I knew that I would go through that as well. So I was already getting glimpses of what would come to pass, you know. Up until that point, nothing like that was happening, you know, when I thought of just my family. But when I thought of, when I made this happen, this came up. Whereas before, when I thought of family and those that I loved and anyone else that you know, there was nothing else to it. It was pretty much just event would happen, boom, that was the end of story.
Right. So essentially it was almost like your whole life was laid out before you and you were essentially given access to all of the information that would happen, and you basically are kind of retaining just a real dim view of exactly what it was that occurred then. But if you were back there, you'd know instantly everything about everything, and there'd be zero doubt about any of it, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it's so hard to explain because I got the glimpse, the gist, the taste, if you will, of what would happen. You know, I mean, I even got the emotional feelings, especially with my mom, you know, everything that would go on, the depression, the sadness, the anger, the hate that I would eventually go through. But at the same time, while in this state, while there, I also knew it's okay. It's nothing. It seems like a lot, but it's really nothing.
Was it almost like it was, because I'm assuming looking back on things, it was probably just a moment that you were actually gone, or just a matter of a couple of moments that you were dead. But did it seem like it was almost like an eternity took place in that just couple of moments, basically?
It definitely seemed like it took a long time. I mean, it's because when I sat there and thought before I said no and before I was revealed the information, I took a long time thinking. I mean, I thought, you know, I thought about the family, my own mom, you know, do I want to experience living? Do I want to, you know, or do I want to just go on with this? Because, I mean, it was a really happy, joyful experience. So, yeah, no, it seemed like it took a long time, especially just that low portion alone, let alone reviewing because I went through every individual family member, too. You know, my mom, my one brother, my other brother, my grandma, my grandpa, you know, just everything.
Well, that's really cool. Yeah. So, and just to verify for the people, I'm obviously the person that you were deciding to choose to be with, which I'm grateful for. But, when you were to verify for the people, we have basically gone through everything that she was told that we'd go through before the period of time that we would be married. She had the three events end up occurring. There was all of the things that she was basically told she would go through. She has gone through. The kids are mine from a previous marriage, but the kids are hers for all intents and purposes, because they've always from day one basically looked at her as being mom. And they love her and adore her as if she is, you know, their own, and she feels the same way. So, you know, it's all there. It's all come to pass exactly how it is that you were told it was going to come to pass. To me, that's awesome. It verifies to me that there's definitely something else that's beyond, and you've actually changed my life just based on the fact that you've gone through this and know everything. I mean, it's like having personal information here of wow, there really is stuff, you know, beyond, even though I knew it before. It's that much more verified for me just based on your experiences.
Yeah, it's to kind of rehash what you were just saying. For the first few years after this happened, well, for the first few weeks really after this happened, I kept dreaming of the fractaled image of you and the kids, and then it went away. And then for a few years, I denied the fact that it was true. I mean, first of all, I didn't even really understand what it was that happened for years. I just kind of thought of it as a vivid dream. And for years, I just pretty much denied that any of it was going to happen, that it was just a weird and wacky dream. But sure enough, eventually I started to fall apart with my mom first and then the family. My mom started to become verbally abusive towards me. I ended up being molested by a cousin, and long story short, I became the black sheep of the family. Even to this day, I'm the black sheep of the family. And that event, that single point event that has cut me off from the family, was the day I moved in to live with Ira. And it's funny, too, because how I knew Ira was the one, it was when I first hugged him. And when I first hugged him, it seemed like it took an hour to give a simple hug. But during that time period, it was like, boom, this is it. This is the man. This is the one you were wanting. This is the one you were looking for. You're going to have a period of separation and then three hills. And after that, you will be married and be together for the rest of your life happily. And I let go, and now all that's going through my head is, holy shit, what is going on? You know, I mean, I couldn't understand what it was. And sure enough, just a few months later, we had a period of separation. My mom forced us to not contact each other for about a year. And as soon as that happened, I'm like, okay, I'm thrown in the towel. This is it. This is the one, you know? I mean, at that point, I couldn't deny it because I already had my proof from before. And as soon as that period of separation happened, I mean, I didn't even tell him about it. I just, you know, I was just like, it's my own mind. No, the period of separation did happen within 6 months after that. So, as soon as that period of 6 months happened, I'm like, he is the one. There's no way I could deny it now. I mean, at the time, he only had Seth. And sure enough, after we started talking to each other again, his then wife got pregnant again. And I knew it was going to be a girl, but I never said anything. And sure enough, it was a girl. So it's just, I couldn't deny it.
Yeah, it's like as soon as you hugged me, it's like the information that had lain dormant suddenly opened up like a book, and you were like, okay, there you go, there's the information, and now suddenly you downloaded the data or whatever and had everything open wide open again. And then years later, here we are, and we're together, we've been together, we're happy, everything has worked out exactly how it is that you were told it was going to end up happening. And It's crazy to me, but it's awesome at the same time, because it does verify everything that you said in the NDE would end up occurring.
Yep, there's only just a few things that have yet to happen as far as the NDE is concerned. Just very minimal, and it doesn't really even concern you so much. It's just at some point, you know, we're going to move somewhere south, or at least somewhere warmer. That's really the main event that has yet to happen. That, and I'm not gonna find out immediately when my grandpa dies. That was another major thing that I was let known. I'm not gonna know, like, right away when he dies. I'm gonna find out at a later point. So that's the only two things that's really yet to happen that's major. Other than that, all the major things have already occurred. So once those things happen, it's going to be weird because I'm not going to have a tablet to a timeline to go by.
Well, I'm looking forward to moving south because I'm getting sick and cold of this tired, I'm getting tired of the cold up here. Boy, I really messed that one up. Anyways, is there anything else that you want to add?
No, not really. I mean, it's, again, looking back at it all, I'm thinking of other things didn't mention, because there's just so many layers to the whole thing, but nothing really major. I just, you know, I don't regret any of it. It was an interesting experience. It was an amazing experience. Because of it, I don't fear the idea of dying. I will point that out too. I don't at all fear dying. I don't fear the idea of dying. I have every belief that unless other things happen, I'm probably not going to live a very long life. Hopefully at least 20, 30 more years with you at least. But at the same time, I also know that I have a feeling that a stroke is what's going to end me. And it doesn't scare me, really. I mean, I've already had a stroke. I've already had a heart attack already. But I don't die. I don't fear death. That's the biggest thing I get out of all this. I don't at all, in any way, shape, or form, fear the idea of dying. If anything, I actually look fondly towards it. I remember what had happened then. And it was great. It was amazing. And I'm looking forward to when it happens. I'm not fearful of it. I'm looking forward to when it happens.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to take yourself out to get back there, but you're not scared of the idea of arriving there either, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I'm not suicidal in any of this or anything, but I don't want to be one of those people that becomes 80 years old and I got to live to see my grandchildren graduate and all that. No, I just, when it's time, it's time. I'm not going to grasp at any string and any hope and force myself to live longer than my body and everything is ready to. If my body is ready to earlier, then so be it. I'm not afraid of dying and I'm okay with that.
Now, one thing too that you had mentioned to me before, and I don't know if you mentioned it here or not, but you did get the distinct impression that this is not the first time that you've been here and definitely would not be the last time that you're here as well, right?
Yeah, see, that's one of the layer things that I did not mention. It's just, there's so many layers to this thing. It's hard to explain it all.
Yeah, well, you're a human being trying to explain spiritual things, and it's really difficult. But because you're not in the spirit at the moment, but you were then, and it's looking at things from a totally different viewpoint.
Yes, but to confirm what you said, yes, this is not the first life I've had. This is not going to be the last life I've had, or will have, I should say. But yeah, it's not the first. It's not the last.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. I knew you had said that before, but I couldn't remember if you had said it this time around or not. So,
yeah. Now, as to knowing what had happened before, no, I didn't know what happened. I just knew that this was not the first.
Yeah, I know some people have experienced NDEs and they've had their past lives shown to them and future lives shown to them, but you didn't experience that. You just looked at what was going to be happening in this life, but you probably could have found that out if you really had asked for it, basically.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, it was pretty much an open book. I was able to look at anything. I mean, had I been maybe older and this happened, I probably would have looked more deeply into other, you know, woo-woo factors as to, you know, what explains this, you know? And
yeah, but you were 4 years old when this happened, so you kind of were going into it from a four-year-old's perspective.
Exactly. You know, the higher thinking things didn't concern me at that time. You know, what really concerned me at that time was friends. I never made friends. School. I've never gone to school yet. You know, what am I going to do as a job? You know, that sort of things is what I was looking forward to. Not, what's the secrets of the universe? No, that didn't bother me at that time.
Well, one thing that you'd said to me before too, and this, again, just to kind of expand on things a little bit, because it's all fractal. You had mentioned to me at one time that when you first went into it, it was like you were looking at it from that four-year-old's perspective. But then as soon as the life started to unfold for you, suddenly you were looking at it from a much more adult kind of a perspective. Everything was open to you and you had understanding, deep understanding about everything.
Oh, yes, most definitely. It's hard to explain it all. It's just, I was able to look at every little detail that I was able to see and understand it and know that it was going to happen and be able to accept that it was going to happen, such as the whole, you know, with all the same thing with the whole family of slowly fall apart. Though I didn't want it to happen, I also knew it was meant to be. It was going to happen. It was one of those things. It had to happen. It was going to happen whether I wanted to or not, had I chose to live.
Okay, cool. I think that's all the questions I can think of at the moment. So thank you, honey. I appreciate you coming on and telling your story.
Yeah, no problem. And by the way, if anyone ever has any like further questions or anything about it, feel free to contact us at the feedback at OpenEyesNetwork.com, because I'll happily answer any questions that anyone has. You know, it's not something I'm going to hide. It's not something I'm going to, you know, keep within myself and na-na-na-na-boo-boo, this is all you get to hear about it, you know? So, yeah, no, that's really about all I have. So thank you for letting me share this, and thank you for listening.
Okay, so real quick, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss a little bit of my thoughts as far as Jolene's NDE is concerned, and I'm going to discuss the topic of reincarnation as well. This break's going to be kind of short, so be sure to stick around.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
Open Eyes looks for the truth in all things, no matter where it may lead. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters are bringing to this world, or aliens and UFOs, no subject is taboo or off-limits. Listen to Open Eyes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the L&M Network at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes.
The videos of Jonathan Gruber have now become kind of almost a hit series.
You're stupid to understand the difference.
First, by mislabeling.
All the stupidity of the American voter or whatever.
The fact that some advisor who never worked on our staff expressed an opinion that I completely disagree with in terms of the voters is no reflection on the actual process that was run.
Many of them I've stolen ideas from liberally. John Gruber.
You know, basic exploitation of the lack of economic understanding of the American voter.
I don't know who he is. He didn't help write our bill. I don't know if you have seen Jonathan Gruber of MIT's analysis of the what the comparison is to the status quo.
They'll call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever.
Let me say, if you look up stupid in the dictionary, you find Gruber's picture.
But I sent it because so many people worked so hard, including John Gruber.
And the only way we could take it on was first by mislabeling it.
Mr. Gruber was an advisor.
The problem is not that Gruber helped them put Obamacare together because he was the man.
Some advisor who never worked on our staff.
The architect, Jonathan Gruber, reportedly has had more than a dozen appointments to visit the White House since Democrats began drafting the health care law.
Easier to talk about 6 and 8 year old videos.
The realistic guy's like, look, I can't just do this. He said, it's just not going to happen politically. The bill will not pass. That ultimately became the genesis of what's called the Cadillac tax.
Some advisor who never worked on our staff.
He was certainly viewed as an important figure in helping to put Obamacare together.
Professor, do you really think the American voters are stupid?
No comment.
And welcome back to Open Eyes. Thank you so much for sticking around through that break with me. I definitely appreciate you guys being here. I hope that you've been enjoying this topic so far, and I hope that you enjoyed the conversation there with Jolene and some of the experiences that she went through. Bear in mind when you listen to that, that she wasn't even describing everything that she went through with it. Like she said, there's a just a fractaled image of what she experienced with it all, and that as life progresses, more of it seems to open up to her, unfolding before her like a flower or the pages in a book. Every day she experiences the after effects of this near-death experience that she had. And she's not the only one that has things like this occurring to her. A lot of people that experience near-death experiences, they come away from it with a radical change in the way that they think about life, the way that they think about the universe. I found a paragraph here that I wanted to read to you because I think that it does sum it up really, really nicely. There's more than 15 common characteristics of an NDE that have been reported. An NDE may include only one or two of these elements, and in a few cases, all of them. These can include a sense of being outside of one's physical body, sometimes perceiving it from a outside position, a sense of movement through darkness or a tunnel, intense emotions, heightened perceptions, experiencing a great light or darkness, perceiving a spiritual realm, which may include vividly memorable landscapes, encounters with deceased loved ones, spiritual beings and/or religious figures, knowledge of the nature of the universe, a life review, a sense of oneness and interconnectedness, a border of no return, and a sense of having knowledge of the future, and also messages regarding life's purposes. No two experiences are exactly alike. Everybody that has these experiences experience things slightly differently, even if they do sort of have the same overarching feel to them or events to them. The most commonly reported type of NDE involves intense feelings of peace, joy, and love. Often also an encounter with an unconditionally loving light. That was especially prevalent in Jolene's, if you remember correctly. She said that she sensed that there was a being right there beyond the veil that was surrounding her with just this intense feeling of love and peace and happiness. In a great number of cases, the lasting effects of an NDE are that the people walk forward in life with a renewed purpose and a sense of peacefulness about death and really no longer having any fear of it. Within a lot of cases as well, there's this prevailing sense or theme that this is not the first life that you have and won't be the last. And this is the idea of reincarnation. Reincarnation is the idea that that the cycle of life is a repeating pattern, that we as eternal beings live through life after life, kind of continuing on with an endless journey through time. Some people think of it as being a matter of karma, where you're affected by what you do in one life or another. So what you do in one life determines what life is going to be like for you in the next life that you live. If you live life like a slug, then you're going to come back as a slug or something to that effect. This idea has actually been one of the driving forces behind the caste system that we see in India, for instance. what you're born into status-wise reflects the things that you did in your previous life, and you're there as either a punishment meant to refine you as a soul, or as a gift, which is meant to reward you for the things that you did. The prevalent Buddhist belief, on the other hand, is tied to the idea that a consciousness changes each time that you live a life, and is therefore a different person, but the same soul overall. The same energy or entity, just in place with a different consciousness, a change of mind. That's a simplified version of it anyhow, nutshelling it, basically. There, quite frankly, has really been a lot of evidence to show the reality of reincarnation in one form or another. I have a few examples that I want to give you that I've run across that I find to be really, you really get a sense of that this is proof of it all. I'm not saying that, okay, well, this is 100% proof, because obviously I wasn't there to experience the things, but there really are a lot of stories and events that have come out of people that have these past life experiences. And you really have to wonder. It really does make you look at things a lot differently if you take them as truth, which I do. I mean, I fully understand the fact that this is not the first time that we're here. Again, I have sort of extraneous circumstances to come to that understanding of things, but still, I've had it for a long time, you know? So in one case, a child in Turkey remembered the life of a man who was killed by a shotgun. And when they examine the history there, hospital records told of a man who had died after 6 days of injuries caused by a shotgun to the right side of his skull. The boy in particular question here was born with what's called unilateral microtia, which is a malformed ear, and hemifacial microsomia, which is an underdevelopment of the right side of his face. And upon examination of everything that went on in this case, it was basically determined that this new child was the soul of the man who had died due to this shotgun shot, and that this life basically has been so drastically impacted by that shot that he was even born with these defects reflecting the gunshot that happened. In another story that I ran across, at age 6, Taranjeet Singh was living in Aluma Miana village in India. He had been claiming since the age of 2 that his real name was Satnam Singh and that he was born in Chakachela village in Jalandhar, which was roughly 40 miles away from where he currently lived. The boy recalled basically that he was a 15 or 16 year old boy that he knew that his father's name was Jeet Singh, that a guy who had been riding on a scooter had hit him, and that's what killed him, that he had been carrying a certain set of books for school and was able to name off the books exactly, and was able also to tell that the books were covered in the blood from his injuries. He also said that he had 30 rupees in his wallet at the time of his death. So he had been so adamant and so sure that this was how things were that his father ended up going to the village in question to investigate. So his father, Ranjit, asked a teacher at the school there if a boy named Satnam Singh had really died there. And the teacher did say that yes, he had, that it was a accident by someone running over him with a scooter, and that the boy's father was named Jeet Singh, which was exactly what the young lad was claiming. The father, Ranjit, then reached out to the family of this teenager who had been killed, and he was able to confirm everything that his son had told him had happened, every single thing. And when the family then brought Taranjeet to meet with this family, he was able to identify everyone with no problem without being prompted to do so. It's a really weird story. It's one that does show again that some people, for whatever reason, can carry over the memories of what happened to them before. It's like my take on it is that the reason why we're born with amnesia in this life about the past lives and about the things that we went through before is because we are here to experience a new life and that is not impacted by the previous ones, that has, you know, no connection to it. A brand new experience, a brand new movie, if you want to say it that way. And so we're born with this amnesia process on us to basically allow us to continue on without being affected by these previous ones. And for whatever reason, I guess to maybe teach lessons or whatever, some people are born retaining these memories and they're never impacted by the amnesia process. That's my take on why some people can remember it. I think it's a matter of lessons. I'll get to that here in a bit. But another one that I found was really interesting is about a man named John McConnell. This man was fatally shot 6 times in 1992. He left behind a daughter who was named Doreen. Now, in 1997, Doreen gave birth to a son named William. William was diagnosed with pulmonary valve atresia, which was a congenital condition in which one of your valves becomes faulty and it directs blood from the heart to the lungs instead. The right ventricle of his heart was also deformed. After surgery, his condition improved. Now, when John was shot, one of the bullets went into his back, which hit his left lung and the main pulmonary artery in his heart. So John's injury and William's condition both impacted things in the exact same way. Well, one day while trying to avoid being disciplined by his mom, William told Doreen, "When you were a little girl and I was your daddy, you were bad a lot of times and I never hit you." And he had said things very similarly to this woman before. When William asked Doreen about a cat that she'd had as a little girl, and he mentioned that he had called it Boss, Doreen realized that the cat that she did have as a child was named Boston, but her father called it Boss. He was able to state the day that he was born, which was on a Tuesday, and also the day that John died, which was on a Thursday, before he even knew the days of the week. He said that he had been told on Tuesday by God that he was ready to come back. So, these stories you could kind of look at and poo-poo if you so desire, but they really are there. They really are there to show that, hey, there's something going on with all of this, and we just don't know the whole damn truth of the story. How can we judge and claim that we know when we really don't? Now, of course, people will come along and try to debunk and poo-poo and otherwise shillery at the idea of NDEs and reincarnation, and they'll claim that there's zero evidence for it. Yet there's also zero evidence against it. They claim that they understand what consciousness is and what it's all about, and yet they can't even point to it and say, well, there it is. They claim that they understand it, and yet they have zero clue about how it forms or what its place is in the brain, and yet, poo-poo. A vast majority of them, in fact, will do it without ever even taking a look at the evidence that is existent for the idea of both of these things occurring. Now, I will say that I don't agree with doing things like past life regressions. I think that the errors that can accrue in that type of thing are really prevalent and dangerous, especially the ones who claim to do it for cash. I mean, how many people are out there that say that they were once Cleopatra and King Edward and that kind of thing, but that kind of stuff, again, muddies the waters up, I guess you could say. Now, here's real quick my personal take on things. I do believe in the soul. And I do believe that we're not here for the first time and that we're not here for the last time. Life is about experiencing lessons. Everything that we go through is about learning lessons. It's about the growth of the soul. We're all aspects of creation, of God, or whatever you want to call it. There's no religion that has things the right way. There's no spiritual tradition that has things the right way. It's all about guesswork and trying to put forward the idea that there's something going on, trying to explain these experiences. It's all about going through everything that we go through in order to experience everything that it is possible to experience, because that's the ultimate goal of creation, to experience things. We can learn a lesson in everything that we do and that we go through. All things are there to teach us, to give us the opportunity to move forward. And everything is balanced out in the end. I mean, even negative things have positive outcomes if you look hard enough and you understand things from a top-down viewpoint. Hitler, for instance, would be considered to be a large negative, but one positive thing that came out of the actions that he did as the leader would be the lesson that we can never allow a person like him to come into power again. That's a positive outcome to a negative situation. Again, you can take the top-down viewpoint of it all and come to an understanding that there are deeper things involved in all of this, and that really is about lessons. It's about the long-term view of things, I guess you could say. I mean, at the end of all of my shows, I always say, have fun. And it's because life is about experiences, and you may as well have fun while you're doing it. That's my take on things. I will actually get further into that kind of stuff at a later point in time, maybe next week. It's a topic that I hold near and dear to my heart. So guys, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. I am unfortunately out of time, and I really would love to cover this a lot more. If you go to my website, the show notes for this show will be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE070. I'll have links to all of the stories that I talked about in this show. I'll have more of them listed there as well. And I hope that you guys come away with this with a deeper concept that there are things that go on with us that we just do not understand yet. And yet, it's possible. So if you wanted to send me an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. If you want to go to my Facebook or Twitter pages, those are at Open Eyes Network. I'm also at Ira Robinson on both of those. And if you tune in on Friday, I will be talking about religious issues, and I hope that you guys will find it to be interesting. Stick around. Michael Vera will bring you the last frequency here in just a few minutes. And until next time, guys, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening. Again, tune in Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, latenightinthemidlands.com. We'll be right back.